Thank you for tuning in to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. Today we have Kirk McKenzie, who is a fire chief at Kasuma's fire department and a thought leader in the fire technology space. Kirk discusses how the fire industry is changing and how technology is being applied to bring value to today's firefighters. We will dive into the new dynamics of virtual reality and how this can help both general public and firefighters better prepare for real-life fire scenarios. Kirk is a true thought leader in this space, and we are thrilled to hear his perspective on the future of smart firefighting. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Inside Darley podcast. Today, really excited to have Kirk McKenzie, who is the with the Consumers Fire Department. Kirk, how are you doing today? Welcome to the Inside Darley podcast.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a privilege to be here. I'm doing well, thank you.
Excited to have you. Well, I know you're really well into some of the technology space and some of the innovation within the fire service. And to get this podcast rolling, I'd love to kind of hear from your perspective of how has some of this new technology adoption changed in the fire service over time?
Well, and what we've got running now in the fire service is, I'd say, generally been running for some time, where all of our personnel have their own radios. Thermal imaging cameras are well propagated throughout the industry. And at Kasuma's Fire in Central California, we have one on every first out unit, 8 engines, a ladder truck, and most of our ambulances. And we're seeing that around the industry in mobile data computers. And it's what's most exciting to me is where we're going in the near future, where we have applications on our phones that have come into play in the last couple of years, helping with CPR and even bystander CPR and saving lives. With those applications, I'm getting dispatch information on applications on my phone. We're using tablets for patient care reports. And in the near future, we expect to be pushing medical records for those in need, and we're seeing applications out in the field where through a modest subscription base that citizens can contact dispatch and have their location known to first responders in a way that we couldn't imagine just a few years ago. So to me, we're just getting started in tech in the industry in a way that's going to save lots of lives.
That's fantastic. And I know you're really entrenched in a lot of this innovation that's going on. And you brought up some of this, the apps on the phone and maybe a virtual assistant and some of this location awareness. And to dive a little further into that, could you tell me what does this sort of a smart world look like in the fire service? And maybe what are some examples of how that these smart technologies are actually being applied and used to benefit the first responders today?
Well, and it's in some places it's rather it's early in as much as it's not distributed well across the industry, but we're seeing around the world teams doing work with things as simple as 360-degree video content. Team out of New Zealand did a great PR for community risk reduction, where millions of people have seen the 360 video of an actual fire, related to planning an exit drill in the home, so that when responders arrive, they know if everyone's out of the structure. That's a critical thing for us. And then we have other groups that are looking at what will we do next with virtual reality setups for teaching citizens about the fires are. The kids need to stay away from lighters and matches, stop, drop, and roll in case they're close. Where to catch fire, always to know two ways out. And if there's a kitchen fire, for the adults to train in 360 video or in VR content on how to mitigate that problem. And then the same for first responders. There's a lot of work being done still early, but good work being done in 360 and 3D content where firefighters can immerse themselves into scenes for training. And then in the end, I see we're going to be an Iron Man or Iron Responder sort of situation, where we have data that has been previously reserved for warfighters in aircraft inside the face piece of first responders or incident commanders on the outside through augmented reality. But we'll get more into that a little bit later.
That's fascinating. And just to touch on the VR really quick, that's interesting how you'd mentioned there's applications. In my mind, I first thought just VR for the firefighters, which seems like there's a lot of use cases for that, but also VR training for the general public to give them some different experience to, oh, hey, if there is a fire that goes on and my smoke alarm goes off, what does that look like and what do I do? And that's interesting that we're looking at VR applications for both the general public for fire training and also first responders.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, we're all here for the public. That's the point of what we do, is to preserve life, and the best way to fight fire is to prevent it. And so if we could do a nationwide or global wide community risk reduction project by allowing people to see how quickly a fire spreads in VR, and in time it'll be, there'll be digital scent, and they'll, kids will learn the difference between the odor of a campfire and roasting a marshmallow, and the difference of plastics or the other, you know, home contents burning, and to be able to distinguish and be aware early, and to practice with haptic touch, being able to wear gloves where the children are touching the virtual environment, to learn two ways out and opening a window, and in virtual reality to climb out. And these are all things that are being prototyped right now, and I think will make a big difference by communicating to those we serve.
That's fascinating. The digital scent, I mean, I went to Nepal for the first time last year, and they don't really have a trash distribution system, and they just sort of burn all their trash, and you can definitely, I noticed the smell of what burning plastic and trash smells like compared to the fire or the campfire, which is such different smells of the fire. And those would be good things to teach the youth of, kind of within that whole virtual immersion program. And kind of on that, it's separate to now kind of with the VR talk, I wanted to kind of get your perspective on how VR is this new technology that we're looking at, how can it be adopted? And I know in some ways with different technologies in the past, there's been some technologies that have been maybe not as well receptive or well received in the fire service, because it's maybe perceived as reducing the need for a firefighter or reducing the, you know, the whatever the firefighter's job is. But could you touch on how technology is not necessarily replacing traditional training or replacing firefighters, but instead actually enhancing and making firefighters safer?
Yeah, absolutely. So tech is an adjunct tool for us, is the way I look at it. And in some ways it makes our job more efficient, in as much as we could communicate to the whole community or the whole country or the connected globe, say maybe 3 billion people are connected through maybe 30 billion devices right now. And so if we could communicate directly to them, that makes makes us more efficient. Replacing us, that's fairly laughable. We still need to have the boots on the ground to do the work. And actually, now we need more personnel. We have large organizations looking at and implementing chief technology officers in their organizations, because there's got to be somebody to manage this content, to produce it, to manage it, to distribute it. So we need more personnel, and they need to have some tech savvy to be more efficient in their work. But it's simply another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, I like that. And I think we now live in this data world where we're inundated with data, which is great, but it comes down to the point of, well, how can we take all this data and turn it into actionable data, to where it can provide real-time data to the firefighters and also allow us to play Monday morning quarterback to understand, hey, maybe we should have done X, Y, and Z a little differently.
Agreed. There's two points I want to make on that. One was that, and actually both maybe out of the discussion of artificial intelligence, the lead engineer at NASA that's doing some work previously, reserved for rocket science, doing some work for first responders. I'll get to that, but we were having a dialogue about, well, what about, you know, will tech replace us? And there's a study done that surgeons and, you know, MDs were concerned about that. And the study indicated, well, a fraction of the personnel could be replaced by robots, but the vast majority, almost 80%, just has to be a human at the wheel. And regardless, then maybe that buys us 20% of not spare time, but time that can be used to identify better efficiencies instead of always being up to our shoulders in a heavy workload, that it makes us more efficient rather than replace us and gives us many, many jobs. And certainly this will be a discussion that goes on for decades to come. But when you talk about digesting data, because that's so critical, and for us to digest as humans, a 3-inch binder on call volume over the last 20 years and the trends that we're seeing and growth and what the market's going to do, and is our tax base going to increase, and how many personnel are we going to need to hire, how many people are going to retire, and how are we going to manage the training on all these new personnel and get them up to speed on the legacy way of doing business. And the artificial intelligence program that I'm thinking that can really help us digest this data and do and have actionable intelligence out of it is called Audrey, and it's at the Jet Propulsion Lab with backing, considerable backing, from the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Group. The Next Generation First Responder Group have funded Audrey and is being prototyped and used and being also admired by Department of Defense teams for how it can provide actionable intelligence from having digested reams and reams of materials that would take any one of us our whole career to read through, and yet it has it in its back pocket, and it can consider that and even reach out to the web and look for information where it has holes in its intelligent system, and then offer information out to first responders in the field. And we look forward to the possibility of using that my understanding should be open sourced in the next year and a half, something along those lines. But again, it's NASA's Jet Propulsion Audrey program that's being assisted by Department of Homeland Security NGFR, Next Generation First Responder. And that is one of the most inspiring things I see for our industry over the last 29 years.
That's exciting that there's a lot of big players into that, and so hopefully some deep pockets putting some money behind it. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into this Audrey concept. And could you maybe, without maybe revealing too much, something that we could hear about, give me sort of a use case example of some sort of data set that would be interpreted, and then how that data could be utilized and turned into an actionable data for a firefighter, whether it's data on weather, whether it's data on wind patterns within a wildfire scenario, or something to do with some of the integrated sensors on PPE gear. I mean, could you walk me through some type of example of what that sort of data capture, data understanding, and then mobilization of data would look like?
Yeah, That's all good stuff, Kevin. You've always obviously been reading some of those reams as well. So, and as much as I know about the program, and I can share whatever it is I can pull out of my noggin here. But my understanding is there is some backing. I think about $40 million investment over the last 4 years from DHS into the program, and I don't know the detail of what Audrey is so far digested, but my idea is that we enter standard material like NFPA standards and OSHA needs, and then we do district-specific stuff, standard operating procedures for Cosumnes Fire or the Sacramento region or whoever might be using it, standard operating guidelines procedures, personnel information. Say maybe they take my state certifications and incident command training, whatever, all my certifications and my experience, maybe some of the calls I've been on. Audrey digests all the calls of our district over the last year, for the last 5 years. Would definitely get real-time feed on what's the weather today, what's the weather forecast, is it, how predictable is that weather forecast? And then when we have stuff like the Santa Rosa fires that we had last fall, and instead of the system being behind the power curve from the moment that the first fire is identified, because it ended up over 6,000 structures were lost, 44 lives, and I think the total count was 10,000 first responders. And if Audrey was on the program, I think it would have notified dispatch early on in the incident commanders to get more personnel started earlier, and to then be able to provide patches for communication for different radio systems, and they could integrate the Internet of Things and real-time traffic data analytics and facial recognition and computer vision, and we could bring it all together to have literally like the iron first responder system for us, that is the emergency response personnel, but more importantly for all those we serve, those who were trying to get out and needed to know what the best way to get out of their community was, and there'd be roadways would be blocked. And if artificial intelligence was considering that, oh, there's 100 cars right here, and through people's health monitor, I can tell their heart rate's 150, and I can do predictive analysis and say, oh, they're in a panic state right now, versus this route over here, the cars are all moving at an average speed of 10, 15, 20 miles an hour. People's heart rates are 110, so on. It could say that's the escape route that we should be using, and push that information out to citizens so that those who are able to escape, notify them early, get them out so responders can get to the job of fighting the fire rather than banging on doors trying to just get the people out and not having the capacity to actually attack the fire. And then when you mentioned wildland, of course, end-to-end structure fires, it makes me think of computational fluid dynamic modeling, which is physics-based fire model that would give us a predictive output on when and where the fire would spread. And that's certainly being done in our big fires. But boy, if we could do that in near real time, that'd be hugely beneficial. And I think Audrey in time will be certainly capable of that. Conceptually, the possibility exists.
Very cool. Yeah, it seemed like in this last talk, we were just talking a little bit about the wildland firefighters and some of the firefighting applications and some of that tracking and awareness. And I'd like to try and transition this now to maybe a little bit more of the urban type discussion with smart cities, and pick your brain a little bit on, with the whole notion of everyone talking about smart cities and smart city design, what are some of these ways that, from an urban planning perspective, and then also from a first responder perspective, that where kind of technology innovation can sort of help the first responders of the future within this future smart city world that we're moving to?
Well, there's certainly a lot being done on that around the world as we move into 5G, and data sets are going to be moving so much faster. We're going to see the autonomous vehicle, both terrestrial based cars and trucks. We'll see it and one day maybe fire apparatus, but I'm sure that's causing a stir to some of the listeners, and autonomous airborne vehicles that may transport autonomous airborne vehicles will transport first responders to the scene of emergency. I'd put a nickel on it. So the technology that will allow terrestrial-based or airborne-based vehicle to navigate on its own, if you will, by remote sensing and being able to know its location in 3D, those sort of technologies coupled with wireless transmitters on street lights all through a city, making mesh networks, so we have connectivity of data sets in 3D. We have planning for in the smart city world, there's so much that is being planned for, the demands on water, being able to meter how much water is being used at a given time, and that it all becomes automated, that we have huge capacity in these smart city developments to know in advance how many personnel we'll need on a given call, and or how many personnel we need over the next year, 5 or 10 years. One of the groups doing some cutting edge work with that, the Digit Group, is a global smart city designer and has a platform called Orbi that they're working on that I think is going to be the, one of the ones that does good work. But certainly IEEE, and there's many groups doing great work in long-term planning for smart cities that will prevent emergencies and make life all that more efficient, or easier and more efficient in emergency response by integrating the smart city sensors and giving us that real-time information and the 3D data of the building set. So when we arrive, rather than having a 2D diagram, we actually, well, back to the AR, what if we could look up at the building with a set of glasses and we could know where person, you know, where those in need were and what their heart rate was, and potentially, if they allowed us, who their next of kin was and what their medical records were, so we would know how best to serve them.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the whole level of creating a mesh network, or how we're using the 3D pictures to be able to give better situational awareness and a lot of these cool applications in the smart city. And I'm curious, is there any particular city that you can think of today that is somewhat maybe leading the charge on sort of the smart city design? I mean, I know Dubai has all this crazy infrastructure and buildings, and they've got some cool fire tech, and different places throughout the world have it. But from your perspective, are there any particular city that you think is sort of leading the charge that might be a model for other urban city designs in the future?
Well, I'd like to say the Sacramento region. That is,
of course.
We're working on making things happen here. Sac City has definitely got a smart city initiative going on. There's a promise of 5G being built into the area, one of the first in the nation. There's work being done at the Capitol. It hasn't been announced yet. A 21st century smart firefighting bill from the Assembly that would fund pilot sites across the state of California. Around the nation, certainly Houston, Harris County, Washington, D.C.'s got stuff going on. Kansas City has got some stuff going on. Canada is working on it. And then across the pond, the UAE, I just had the privilege of attending the World Government Summit. 4,000 delegates from around the world, prime ministers, presidents, UN officials, and I was both very well received and incredibly inspired by what I saw regarding the AI. I got to meet the Brigadier General, head of artificial intelligence for the Dubai Police. And I mentioned facial recognition scanning. Were they using that? And he said, yes, in retinal. And I said, okay, and what's the range on retinal scanning? Turns out it's about a meter, so they have law enforcement officers that are robotic, that are assisting the visitors to the community, tourists, helping them map their way and so on. At the same time, they may be identifying subjects of interest that are a threat to the state. So they're certainly a group to watch. And then overall, on the global platform, I would look for the international Forum on the Advancement of First Responder Innovation, a group started with our Department of Homeland Security here. I believe it's maybe 20 nations or more who are part of that, that they're affiliated with that group. And so nations around the world are getting together to look at what we can do as we move to 5G. And I just spoke with someone yesterday who handled the IT for the Olympic Games, and was saying that they're already looking at what's next after 5G. So as we move out of legacy into next gen, what's the next gen? And so I certainly will be looking, trying to keep a pulse on who's moving that ball quickly, Kevin, and you let me know who else you see, which is a city that's getting it done, and I'll look forward to a visit.
For sure, and it's so funny you say that. I mean, just kind of like Apple, it seems like they're always coming out with a new phone every year, and I'm always thinking, well, where and kind of how are they keep coming out with this new technology? But they have a lot of this technology that they keep backlogged so they can continue to upload a couple new features every year. So it's interesting that you say that, where right now all the craze is 5G this, 5G that, but there's already going to be that next thing after the 5G. So it's going to be interesting to see the race for this technology. And I know companies and countries around the world are racing to be the leaders in this sort of 5G world. So interesting on that. And I guess one kind of like closing note that I'd asked earlier in this question about these cities that are moving the ball forward. It seems that any city or any fire department could become a leader or a participant in this world of smart firefighting, this world of innovation tech. But it seems like to me, and may correct me if I'm wrong, is that part of it is somewhat of a cultural adoption and a commitment to innovation that's needed by different fire chiefs and different fire departments and municipalities to support that. Do you see that as one of the obstacles to the adoption of some of this new tech, or kind of what would you sort of say as far as to other fire departments that are thinking about this but are maybe reluctant to adopt innovation in the fire service?
Let's see if I can round up the several thoughts I have on this. The first one, when you're talking about that manufacturers are coming out with new models of phones and tablets and systems all the time, and absolutely, they need to do that for the bottom line of their business to stay employed, and over their business cycles, we will see frequent updated changes because they're working on prototypes that we've not imagined. And there's other systems that are still some distance off for them that they will undoubtedly, before the next time we talk, Kevin, they will have advanced them to the point where they're prototyping those, and so that'll. It'll be a constant changeover, which in part challenges our industry and us always being prepared for what's coming next, because we're trying to keep up with our call volume. We're trending at 7% a year in our jurisdiction. Took 16,000 people to the hospital last year, and in the next 5 years we'll be running 28,000 emergencies. And the thought of changing out systems a couple times between now and then is like, oh goodness. I'd beg to question anyone who says that their smartphone isn't more valuable to them than their flip phone was 10 years ago. So how do we do the adoption? And yes, it's open to me. The innovation is open to everyone who's willing to come to the table. You could get a 360-degree camera for about $50, I think, and you could transmit it live through social media. The capability of transmitting 360 video from an apparatus to an incident commander or all the way back to the fire administration exists today, and it's not that complicated. And I would say that while we appropriately romance and respect our history in the fire service and emergency response and in law enforcement, we appreciate the due diligence and hard work of the men and women that came before us, and we owe it to them. And we owe it to them to look for what can we do to improve? What can we do to leverage even the gritty knowledge in a loss of a fellow comrade from the line, a line of duty, that how can we look at and go inside the physics-based the fire model, the computational fluid dynamic model of a fire loss, Cherry Road, Berkeley Way, Station Nightclub. All these fires have fire models. We can go inside them in VR. We can and we must look for ways to advance it, and yeah, there'll be some bumps along the way culturally, as there was with large diameter hose, 800 megahertz radio, SCBAs, protective hoods to keep our ears on. All these things had their challenges, and we will find ways to move beyond that. And I encourage anyone that's thinking about tech to absolutely give it a go, because there's lots of places where there's movement happening, and in every jurisdiction can, and I believe should, take a look, see what they can do.
I like that. And similar to kind of what Darley is going through, I mean, we're a 110-year-old company. We've had a lot of good history with our past, but we know that we can't get complacent with what got us here. We know we need to continue to innovate to adapt to the marketplace. So similar to what fire departments are dealing with, it's very important to embrace our roots. That's what got us here. But we know that the market's changing, the world's changing, the technology's changing. And if we don't, then we're just going to continue to – we'll find ourselves – severely behind and unprepared to be able to deal with some of the disasters and increase of volume calls that, like you were saying, that we'll deal with here moving forward.
Absolutely, Kevin, and compliments on your smart firefighting website and the work you've done in the podcast, having listened to a number of them. And it's admirable that you and your team are absolutely staying at the front line of things, and it has to be. And while we're on the subject, I want to throw out some more resources for people who are thinking about getting into this. Yeah. So in addition to the DHS's group doing great work on this, hats off to NFPA, particularly Casey Grant at NFPA and his work in the NFPA the foundation, the research foundation, an arm of NFPA that looks at where are we going with this. And so a considerable amount of work has been done by himself and his team out there and produced a smart firefighting roadmap. And they have a whole web page with all sorts of resources for people to look at, whether it's first responders or private industry, public partnerships. So I hope the insurance companies certainly get on board to assist with R&D and prototyping and implementation of that. Looking up accelerator programs, first responder accelerator programs, there's monies. It is a challenge. One would be wise to get a grant writer to assist in securing early funding to do work for the jurisdiction, unless they happen to have spare cash, although I think most jurisdictions recognize that there's some value to this, and it's going to take a financial commitment, but we want and need all the assistance we can get, like from the state, and certainly the feds are putting some money into it. DHS has some accelerated grants available. So those are some places to look to get inspired.
Okay. Any other place if they wanted to learn more about you or Audrey, or if they wanted to just learn more about any of this, any way that they could sort of, a website you have or a contact that you would have that you can provide?
Thanks, Kevin. So if someone did an internet search for DHS NGFR Audrey, they'll find considerable material on it. There's new video out about the program, and then there's a good video from Dr. Ed Chow, who's a principal scientist there. So, and then for my work, somebody searched for 911Go with Smart attached, Smart 911Go. I consider this idea, it's sort of like Pokemon Go, where people could be enabled in a gaming application, but rather than searching for a digital prize in the game, they could be getting fed real-time information to save their life or feed their information if they chose to first responders. And so we could call it Pokey 911, or I like 911Go. So if they search for that, they should be able to find some of the work we've been doing at Cosumnes Fire Department.
That is fantastic. Well, as you mentioned earlier about betting a nickel on the technology, I would raise you a quarter that the technology will continue to bring value to the fire service, and really excited to see it unfold and develop here over time. And they're really, really lucky and fortunate to have thought leaders like yourself to discuss this. And we hope we can continue to do more podcasts with you in the future, and look forward to seeing you at the upcoming FDIC show.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. I look forward to it too. And I'm happy to go Dutch on coffee together, but it'll be more than 2 bits.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll do that at FDIC. There's going to be a lot of good tech there for sure.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Well, thank you, Kurt, for your time, and look forward to talking to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. We'll look forward to the next one, Kevin. Thank you.